Morning to you.
Is this water?
Yes, it's water. And you may use it. You may proceed.
May it please the court, Kelsey Helgett on behalf of the appellant. As a preliminary matter, both the appellant and the appellee agree that the court has jurisdiction under Nebraska Revised Statute 25-1912, subparagraph 2, as noted in both of our supplemental briefs. While we have six assignments of error in the present case, the ultimate issue is whether the appellant's encounter with Sergeant Van Winkle either constituted an unlawful extension of the scope and duration of the investigative stop for expired tags, or had de-escalated into a voluntary cooperation between the appellant and the officer. We will focus our arguments on this distinction, and we will demonstrate that this encounter constituted the former, and as a result, any physical or testimonial evidence was unconstitutionally obtained and should have therefore been suppressed by the district court.
Look, as a matter of sort of the overall view, do we look at all of the surrounding circumstances? Is this a totality of the circumstances examination? And is it based on an objective assessment of the totality of the circumstances?
Yes, Your Honor. The totality of the circumstances is the correct case, correct test to use.
And it's an objective view, correct?
Yes.
Doesn't that mean that whatever the officer's subjective intentions may have been are irrelevant?
I think that the officer's intentions are irrelevant, and that the important thing is the reasonable person standard of totality of the circumstances.
So what the reasonable motorist, objective, not this particular motorist, but what a reasonable motorist would have concluded. That's the examination, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. And
are you disputing any of the factual determinations of the district court on the motion to suppress? In other words, the factual findings it made of historically what happened at any point during this encounter. Are you quarreling with any of those factual findings?
I am not objecting to the factual findings of what occurred in this case. I am questioning the law and whether those facts triggered or violated the Fourth Amendment protections.
Okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
In McGinnis, we are told that in order to expand the scope and extend the duration of an investigative stop, the officer must develop other information during that initial period of lawful detention, and that reasonably justifies the continued investigative detention. Sergeant Van Winkle lacked specific and articulable facts sufficient to give rise to the reasonable suspicion that any further criminal activity occurred.
But hadn't the stop ended?
That's the question. We would argue that the stop had not ended as a part of the totality of circumstances.
What factors do you point at to say the stop had not ended?
Under the totality of the circumstances in this case, we look at the fact that the driver was pulled over late at night. It was cold, that the sergeant's lights remained flashing, indicating that the stop had not ended, that the sergeant returned after saying drive safe, signaling that she was not done with the driver, although we don't know
what about that statement, something to the effect of have a good night and drive carefully?
Well, we don't know what the sergeant actually said to our client because she failed to record the exchange until after the search had begun. That is the closest statement that we believe could have occurred.
District court make a factual finding about what was said?
That was the approximate statement, I believe.
So, and you're not quarreling
with the factual finding.
That that was the approximate statement? No, I am not disputing that.
So aren't we stuck? That's the statement? Approximate or not, is it, at that point, you're not quarreling with the factual finding. Isn't that the finding?
Yes.
Okay.
Additionally, the sergeant resumed questions in the same manner as before. What we look at is, in Hansen, it tells us to consider whether the reasonable person would be able to distinguish the initial lawful traffic stop and what the state argues has now de-escalated into a consensual encounter immediately following that traffic stop. It's a common sense perspective that Hansen identifies, saying that the likely scenario is that there's no change in the coercive authority existing during the lawful traffic stop and the so-called consensual encounter. And did as a result...
Did the officer walk away?
She did, and then...
How far did she get?
To the front of her vehicle.
To the front of...
Of the patrol vehicle.
Okay.
The back of my client's vehicle.
So, take the time that the officer is walking. She said something approximating, okay, have a nice night, drive safely. She's given back any license and registration she's taken, and she's gone. At that point, wouldn't a reasonable motorist feel free to leave the scene?
The amount of time that existed between the officer walking away from the window and the officer getting to the back of my client's car was not enough time for my client to even start her vehicle. So the time that the officer returned to the vehicle indicated to a reasonable person that the stop
okay,
was not over.
Okay, assume the officer gets back in her car. She's sitting in her car. The driver has been given back her materials. She's been told to have a nice night and drive careful. And the police officers returned to her vehicle. Wouldn't a reasonable motorist feel free to drive away at that point?
Yes, and I don't think a reasonable motorist would feel free to drive away when the officer is still outside of the vehicle.
Why is it different? If she walks back toward the patrol vehicle, why is that a different situation than the hypothetical I gave you?
I think it's a different scenario because when a reasonable person is preparing to leave, they want to make sure that the stop is over. And so they want to make sure that the officer has returned to their vehicle so that they can safely move on without hitting the officer, without harming anyone in the situation, and safely leave their parked area. The state would like to rely on the traditional factors of number of officers' presence, display of weapon, physical touching, commanding tone when determining de-escalation. But Hansen shows us that a reasonable person would be unable to discern the de-escalation had occurred when nothing in the officer's demeanor changes. We can even look at State v. McGinnis, where the driver in that case felt the need to ask if he had to grant permission, which is indicative of when that officer started to ask those questions, he did not feel free to leave. So I think that it's important for us to look at what Hansen has said, this common sense perspective of whether a reasonable person would fear that leaving at that point, that those additional questions are being asked, that this stop has been extended, would result in some sort of police chase. If they were just to, like, start their car and just start going, if that's a legitimate fear, then this stop did not de-escalate. And if it didn't de-escalate, then everything needed to be suppressed by the court. And for that reason, we would ask that the court reverse the district court and remand for appropriate instructions.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. Ms. Osborne?
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
May it please the court, I'm Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state of Nebraska in this matter. As you all know, this is a criminal case where the defendant, Shaylin Hartzell, was convicted of possession of controlled substance, methamphetamine, after a stipulated bench trial. And as the appellant's counsel noted, while there's multiple assignments of error, it really deals with just this one issue of whether or not evidence should have been suppressed in this case.
Counsel, before you get to the merits, can we talk about jurisdiction for just a
moment? Yes, Your
Honor. Both you and the appellant seem to have taken the view that this is a 25-19-12 sub 2 situation, which seems to me to be inherently that the order of probation that was not entered until July was the springing event. Is that where you're headed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I want to ask about something on page 6 of your supplemental brief. You said in a sentence, the only condition of probation other than standard conditions applicable in any term of probation not specifically mentioned by the district court during the oral pronouncement was that this term of probation would be intensive supervised probation. I'm reading that sentence to suggest that you believe there is a statute somewhere that specifies that certain conditions of probation are automatically included in an order of probation, even if not pronounced, or even if not included in the written order of probation. Is that what you were intending to say?
No, Your Honor.
Would you like to clarify what that was getting
at? Yes. As it relates to oral pronouncements and written pronouncements and whether they're consistent or inconsistent, that would actually apply more appropriately in federal situations because, in fact, in the federal structure, it's my understanding that there are separate delineated types of conditions, including mandatory conditions that apply in any probation, standard conditions which are recommended in any probation.
But in Nebraska, that is not the case.
Okay. In Nebraska, my question is similar to Justice Castle on the jurisdictional point, being there are a list of probation terms which may be applied.
That is correct. Under
and
Nebraska
then how
revised,
do we know, yeah, so how do we know what was ordered up?
Well, in this case, from the oral pronouncement, all that was ordered were the special conditions that were specifically stated by the district court in this case. When you look at the probation order, it appears that the district court specifically read into the record what it delineates. I think it's on page... page 2, at the bottom of page 2 of that probation order, it talks about the special conditions. Those are the conditions that the court specifically stated during the sentencing hearing. The other conditions that are contained within that probation order were not specifically stated. And as you have indicated, that statute does not specifically delineate certain conditions that are mandatory, standard, or special under Nebraska case law.
Here, no one seems to be quarreling about what the terms of probation actually are. The quarrel is about something else altogether.
Correct. That is correct. And I think as I've expressed in that supplemental briefing, even if there was an inconsistency in that oral and written pronouncement, unless this court comes to the conclusion that the oral pronouncement was in fact not a final pronouncement, meaning that the district court left something yet to be resolved, which in reviewing the Bill of Exceptions, it doesn't appear that there was anything left to be resolved. The district court sentences her to probation. He reads out some of the conditions, and there's no statement that specifically indicates he's somehow reserving something.
Even if this is a springing situation, this is not something we ought to encourage trial courts to do, should it?
I would agree with that.
All right. Perhaps you want to turn to the merits?
Yes, Your Honor. So as it's been discussed, this case started with a traffic stop for expired license plate stickers. The initial stop is not at issue in this case. It is not disputed that was a lawful traffic stop. During that traffic stop, The officer decides to write a fix-it ticket for the violation. She provides that fix-it ticket. She returns all of the documents that Hartzell initially provided her. She even explains the fix-it ticket, asks if Hartzell has any questions about the ticket, and then she indicates a goodbye by saying, have a good night, drive safe, or something to that effect, as the factual findings that the district court found at the trial level. At that point, this traffic stop has concluded. Hartzell is free to leave, and everything that happened after that point is a voluntary, consensual encounter between the officer and Hartzell.
Well, would a reasonable person think it had concluded if the officer's cruiser lights are still whirling around and the officer has not gotten back into the car yet?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that a reasonable person would believe that they are free to leave under this set of circumstances.
Would a reasonable person, as your colleague representing Ms. Hartzell argued, wouldn't a reasonable person want to stay to make sure that the stop had concluded?
Well, I think at the point
that they be charged with something else?
Well, at the point that the officer says, has given her the ticket, that's the purpose of the stop. She understands that the purpose of the stop has been resolved. She's been given all of her documents back. She has everything she needs to be on her way. The ticket has been explained to her. And the officer has given her a salutation of goodbye, has said, have a good night, drive safe, and has started to walk away back to her police cruiser. Any reasonable person in that situation would believe that this stop is over, and they are, in fact, free to leave at that point. And the officer then the officer takes, let me back up, the district court found, in fact, that essentially Hartzell was told that she was free to leave when she's given that goodbye. Have a good night, drive safe. She's essentially being told, you're free to go on your way at this point. The officer then...
Is that a finding of historical fact, or is that a legal conclusion regarding the Fourth Amendment?
Oh, I think the facts are what actually happened in the case, and I think the court there is looking at those facts and finding a legal conclusion that she essentially was told that she was free to leave at that point.
Are we bound by that legal conclusion?
No, you're not. The factual findings, though, support that conclusion. And then looking at what happens then when the officer comes back up to the window and says, hey, before you go, do you have a minute to talk to me? Again, we have a situation where the officer is not commanding anything. The officer is asking a yes or no question, inquiring whether Hartzell is willing to stay there and voluntarily talk to her, if she's willing to consent to some additional questions. And she absolutely does when she says, yeah, what's up? She agrees to voluntarily stay there and speak with the officer. In going through the circumstances that this court and many other courts have identified as indicative of seizure, none of those factors apply here. We don't have an officer saying or telling a suspect they're not free to go. In fact, we have the opposite of that. We have an officer saying, have a good night, drive safe. There's no threatening presence of multiple officers. There's no display of a weapon. There is no physical touching. There is no use of language or tone of voice indicating compliance might be compelled. Here you have an officer coming up and asking a permissive question, are you willing to stay here and talk to me? And the state has referred to some Nebraska cases in addition to State versus Abu Sari that has been cited in the state's brief. I'd also include that there's another juvenile criminal case of similar nature here, similar facts that was not cited. That is In re Clinton G at Nebraska Appellate, 12 Nebraska Appellate 178. It's a 2003 case, again, a Nebraska Court of Appeals case, deals with that same analysis. And so ultimately here, There's just simply no Fourth Amendment violation because the Fourth Amendment's not even implicated in this situation. There is no seizure, so there's no poisonous tree, as the appellant argues, for the fruit of the poisonous tree relating to the later evidence that they claim should have been suppressed. If there are no further questions, I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? 1 minute and 8 seconds. Ms. Helgen.
Thank you. I think it's important to note that McGinnis said it best, that an investigative stop, which involves a search and seizure that is not based on reasonable suspicion, is tantamount to subjecting the travelers of the public to virtually random seizures, inquisitions to obtain information which could be used to suggest reasonable suspicion, and arbitrary exercises of police power. In this case, Sergeant Van Winkle's sole justification for asking these questions was because she had in the back of her head that she had ran into the appellant over a year before.
I thought we agreed during your opening argument that the officer's subjective intentions were irrelevant. Are you heading a different direction now?
No, I just think that it's important to note that that the court says that in order to ask these questions, there needs to be a reasonable suspicion. And there was no reason for these questions.
Or consent. Right, and that's the whole issue that we have to decide.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next case of the day, then, is Korth versus Luther.